There you go. Little Mysteries of the Deep music, or River Monsters, depending on how you want to look at it. And only appropriate, too, that we play that Beach Boys bumper on Juneteenth, because it's, as far as I know, it's the only Beach Boys hit that was sung by a person of color. Sung by, I don't know if he would call himself African American. He's South African American, anyway. But Blondie Chaplin was the guy who sang that vocal on Ceylon Sailor, not the traditional Beach Boys vocal leader, but the only guy who apparently could sing the song right. There's a cool story behind it. I don't know if you know it, but I mean, there the several people had attempted to do the lead vocal and couldn't pull it off. And Blondie Chaplin, who was a one of those rotating members of the Beach Boys, been in there for a while, he gave it a shot. And you hear the Beach Boys plenty in the background, but he was the one that actually sings the lead vocal on that. Well, anyway, there you go. So heading into open lines, as I said earlier, let's just keep it fun. There's plenty of things in the world and lots of stuff obviously going on in the news this weekend and all that is happening. But let's just table that for the moment and let's just focus forward on wherever you're going to take us next on Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. If you're listening in the first hour on Coast to Coast AM, you heard Tim Banal, who is the guy who tracks and writes the news for our coasttocoastam.com website. And he related that one of the top stories for the week, in fact, I think it's still in the carousel, top of the fold on the webpage tonight, is the story about the Mayan calendar. And could it have been wrong? Could this week have been the week that was actually what we thought of as being 2012? In which case, we only have hours or maybe even minutes to live. Adds a little excitement to open lines. Let's find out. First time caller, Kip is in Louisiana on Coast to Coast AM. Kip?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I kind of had a little story. We had Jeremy on earlier.
Yeah, wouldn't
I
he
got in a
fun?
little. Yeah, well, I got in a reality series a few years ago down here in South Louisiana.
You did?
And I, when our show aired on Animal Planet, we followed
Cool.
the one release. Well, it was six episodes, but anyway.
No. How many people in their life can ever say, "Hey, I only did six episodes"? Right? I mean, that's awesome.
It was a good experience. It was a good experience. But anyway, it's a little small town, and I was down at the little local hibachi eating. You're sitting around the table getting ready, and it was
Right.
a mom and her young boy. He was probably seven or something, and his mom recognized me. It's a small town, so she
Right.
recognized me from the show. Are you an Animal Planet? Yes, ma'am, we are. Well, I'm a fan. And well, her son, he lit up. You're an Animal Planet? I said, well, yes, sir, I am. Could you please tell Jeremy he's my favorite star?
Ah.
I'm like, all right, thanks, kid. I'll let him know. It was
That's
great. It was
great.
great. But
That's
yeah,
very funny.
we caught alligators, turtles, just the local culture. But
Yeah, I love that. But so what was the like what kind of thing that what was the kind of thing you would find that people didn't expect? I mean, the kind of thing that would you could build a show around.
well, people are just infatuated with the South and the gators and
Sure.
everything. And it looks so forbidding, the cypress trees and the marsh,
Right.
the sounds at night.
Right.
I've traveled all over the country. I used to work in nuclear plants, was an instrument technician, and there's no place like the deep swamp. It's
No,
but it's where
I agree.
I was raised in it, and gator season comes around every September, so it's coming soon. I
Yeah,
catch
what do
about
you,
four or five a year.
well, how do they regulate that? How many gators can you take?
According to your acreage, it goes by acreage.
Oh, interesting.
They issue, yeah, it's like 100, somewhere between 100 to 150 acres per tag. So if you've got 1,000 acres of swamp land, you basically get 10 tags, something
Okay.
close.
How hard is it to catch a gator?
Oh, they're pretty gullible. They like chicken. They want to eat, so they're not really. You have to
Gullible.
respect them. Yeah, they are.
I like
But
that.
it's not really hard to catch. It's harder to skin them and process them, but
Yeah, I've
kind
seen
of the
that.
market's kind of falling out now price wise, so it's kind of a fading thing too.
Yeah,
Gators
it's funny. I heard that from somebody else too, that it hasn't, you know, there was a period where it was peaking and a lot of people were getting into that kind of thing. I like gator meat, though. I've had a couple of times. And
I've had it a couple of hundred times.
I bet. But, I mean, I liked it. I thought it was really good. I'd have it if any place offered it. I'd have it more often.
Yes. You could cook it or fry it. Either way, there's a lot can be done with it. I mean, everybody says it's kind of like chicken, but really it doesn't have a strong flavor. So it's
not
seasoning well and. It's good, you know. It
takes Cajun season well, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it does. It does, yeah. for certain.
But I love it.
I listen to you guys every night. I work one of the major refineries down here. So,
all right, well, then I got to ask you a question, and then we'll end on this, okay?
Okay.
What's your favorite hot sauce?
I'm not a hot sauce. I'm a ketchup kind of guy. I'm really not.
Shut up.
I season a lot, and I'll use some Tony's and some Creole seasoning. But
okay,
hot sauce has that vinegar in it. I'm not much on vinegar.
But Tabasco
or Louisiana is the number one and two down here.
That's the debate, right? Is like whether you and I'm particular. I like some of the Mexican hot sauces. I like quite a bit because to your point, some of them are a little more tomato based. So I like Cholula, but I mean, I like a good Louisiana. I'll get that every chance I get. And, my sons and I will go back and forth on Tabasco, but listen, I appreciate that. And, it's good to hear from you. That was very entertaining. And I wish I'd seen that show because I could say I met you too. East of the Rockies, Richard is in Connecticut on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Richard.
Hey, good morning. If it's that way where you are, it is.
Yes,
here.
It is. I'm doing very well. Where are you going to take us?
I had an interesting story, a little bit of time traveling that's appropriate for this show. Going back to about 1971, I was at a place called the Yale Bowl in New Haven. I went to see Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton was putting on a show, and he had a special guest appearance by someone in a white suit with, at the time, almost waist length. Blondish hair and a heavy beard, and he came out and he played the fiddle. I don't even remember the song, and that was it. I had a kind of lousy time at the concert. I got stood up. When I showed up, the bench I was supposed to sit on was full. I had two tickets, and nobody would move to let me sit down.
Ugh.
So I got the usher, and he made people move, and from that time on, all the people in back of me, you know, had an attitude with me.
Right.
Like I was some kind of narc or something.
Right. So I hate that.
I left the show, and I was kind of down, and I was walking home, and there's traffic noise behind me. I'm not paying any attention to it, and I hear someone yell, "Lift your head up. Don't walk with your head down." I turn around, and it's old beat-up Cadillac limo. And the guy sticks his head out the window, and he said, "Oh, do you know who the special guest was?"
Okay, I'm so curious whether if I'm going to write it down here on a piece of paper, and I'm going to curious to see whether I got it right. So go ahead, tell the story.
Okay, and I did not know it at the time, but this was one of the guys John Lennon always used to hang around with in New York. They were nobody famous, but they were always mentioned, like when someone was talking about Lennon being seen here or seen there.
Right.
And he was noted to have, unlike his paisley-painted Rolls Royce when he was in the Beatles, to be driving around in an old beat-up Cadillac limo. So I firmly believe, and this is pure speculation, that putting these facts together, had I answered the question right, I might have been called over to the limo and actually have met John Lennon. But since I did not know who the special guest was,
you know, I'm going to guess who it was. So you to this day don't know whether that was John Lennon or not on the stage.
I do know it was. I mean,
it was
afterwards. I'm not I was a big Beatles fan, John Lennon fan, but I did not know that he used the pseudonym Dr. Winston Boogie. I think forgot to mention that.
Yes.
And that's who he was introduced as.
Oh, okay, yeah, because that is definitely Lennon. That was his Winston Boogie or Winston O Boogie. Yeah, it was his. It was a little pseudonym. You know who I thought you were going to talk, who you were going to mention, was Dwayne Allman of the Allman Brothers.
I met Greg.
Well, because remember, Dwayne and Eric Clapton were performing together regularly during that period, and it's actually Dwayne Allman's guitar licks on for the Derek and the Dominoes album on Layla.
Well, no, I saw Derek and the Dominoes. It was my only trip to the Fillmore.
Oh, shut up. Oh, that's no, totally cool.
God.
I wish I were
God,
you.
I saw that.
I wish I were you.
And, well, the Allman Brothers are weird. I saw them at the University of New Haven when they first came out, and there's like maybe
right.
250 in the audience
right.
at the time. And this was the original style of Allman
yeah.
Brothers.
Right. Right.
So that's
well,
one of the advantages you get for being old. But I found out your secret, Ian.
What's that?
I actually read a little bit of your biography, and I didn't realize you were a sextagenarian.
Oh, I'm 60 now, yes.
No, so it explains why you have. I once commented to the screener there that I'm surprised by your musical knowledge, but now I'm not.
Now, you know, I'm a geezer like you, so exactly.
Well,
I just sound
right.
younger.
I got a few more on you, but it was good talking to you.
I enjoyed talking to you quite a bit. That was good. Those are fun stories. Thank you so much. Bill is in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Bill?
Hi, Ian.
Hi, it's Open Lines.
Yeah, since we played post-doc rock about a month ago, I've been working on another project combining my journalism and history.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's called A Rock Conspiracy FOIA.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, it's where I solve great mysteries of rock. And one of them, coincidentally enough, the previous caller, this one's about Eric Clapton, who is the undisputed ubiquitous icon of British rock. Agreed?
For a generation, yes.
Yeah, of our generation.
Right.
And yet he's got no knighthood. So I have solved the mystery about that, but what is your theory?
Well, he doesn't pay enough British taxes. It's the only way you get knighted.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You only get knighthood comes to you as a reward for remaining a British citizen. No expatriates get knighthood. So that's why Mick Jagger got knighthood, but some of the other Rolling Stones aren't even qualified because they've been living in France for 20 years.
Oh, okay. Well, based on questionable documentation that I got for the rock conspiracy FOIA, nudge,
yeah.
wink, wink, Clapton was, in fact, on his way to Buckingham Palace to be knighted by Queen Elizabeth in 2005 when Her Majesty happened to hear his Lay Down Sally on the BBC, noting the song title contains the grammatically incorrect transitive verb lay in place of the intransitive verb lie.
Lie.
The enraged monarch summarily nullified Clapton's knighthood, sending Eric into a gut-wrenching snit that ended only when former Cream bandmate Ginger Baker smacked Her Majesty on the snout with a drumstick.
Well, I like your story better. It's less mundane, for sure. But that really is that's the core of it right there, if you ever wonder. And why so many people who are, like, nobody would ever heard of them, but they get knighthoods in England all the time for people who own a grocery store chain because they've been paying British taxes for years, and that's your little payback at the end of the rainbow. Wildcard, Janet is in East Village, New York, on Coast to Coast AM. Janet?
Hi, Ian. Yeah, I wanted to say something about a folk song. I had the same experience that you had with Wade in the Water. By the way, I did not know that history of Wade in the Water.
Isn't that cool? Yeah, but, like that.
So before I tell you about the song, I want to say something about your name. You were talking about your name, and is it spelled P-U-N-E-T-T?
Well, it's the anglicized version, so it's P-U-N-N-E-T-T. So, yeah, that's the British spelling.
You know about the Punnett Square, right?
It's that's R.C. Punnett, Reginald Crendel Punnett, and he's a distant relative.
A geneticist.
Yeah,
he came
yeah.
up with the Punnett Square, which is how
yeah.
you figure out, you know, big D, little D, whether you
oh, yeah.
have brown eyes or... Yeah, so that's the first time I came across
right.
that name. What's his name, R.C.?
It was Reginald, and then it's an unusual name. Crundle, I believe, is how it was spelled. But he was the second, really kind of the second or third person to even start talking about genetics. So he lasted until he didn't die until the late 60s, but he was around for a long time. But it was his early work that changed genetics, yep, with the Punnett Square.
He was a distant relative, was he knighted by the Queen?
I don't think so.
No, he didn't do any rock music, so he didn't get knighted.
He didn't pay enough taxes.
This song, very interesting. There's a song, a folk song that I sang for years in the 60s. It was a very big folk song era, you know, where everybody had their guitar.
Sure.
I was sitting around with hootenannies. And the song was called Follow the Drinking Gourd. Did you ever hear of it?
No.
Okay, well, there's a history of this. Well, there's so many songs, all of these so-called Negro spirituals.
Right.
And the slave owners would sit there saying, oh, they're so happy, our slaves are so happy. They're singing all the time. But of course, they're all singing about freedom, you know.
Right.
Let people go. But this one, Follow the Drinking Gourd, I sang for years without ever knowing what it meant. And then I went to a Pete Seeger concert, and the wonderful Pete Seeger explained it. The Drinking Gourd, these were directions along the Underground Railroad.
Oh, right.
People made up a song. The Drinking Gourd was the Big Dipper. You know, a gourd.
Sure.
Like a ladle. Right.
Got it, yeah.
You had to look to the north. To make sure you keep going in the right direction, make sure you see the Big Dipper and keep going in that direction.
Oh, cool.
And, the song is Follow the Drinking Gourd, for the old man is waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the Drinking Gourd. And there was, I think, a Quaker stop-off house there where this Quaker would help you, you know, abolitionists. And all of the words, it's a very exciting song. All of the verses give specific directions. On the left, you know, on the left there's a barn, on the right there's the river, keep following the Drinking Gourd.
And it's a
wonderful song. Yeah,
I think
it's
a great story.
It is,
I will look into that. Somebody tweeted out, and I don't have my Twitter page up, but somebody had said the same thing was true for Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, which was really what they were. It was coded for Harriet Tubman. So it was, and everything was about Harriet, not Chariot. And so, I can't confirm that. So I'm not saying that's true yet, but I'm going to look into that because.
How these people survive? They were so damn clever.
Well, and that's how any of us would survive, right? I mean, even if it was World War II and we were escaping the Nazis, you'd use code. Everybody would. That just makes perfect sense. So, I enjoy talking to you quite a bit. I'm coming up at the bottom of the hour, so I'll pause open lines for now, but tell you we'll give you the numbers you need in just a moment. And what she was referring to, if you missed it in the first hours, I played the old spiritual Wade in the Water, which I love, and it's got a life of its own. There's a couple of cool jazz versions of it, and it's been around for a very long time. But it was not about baptism, which is what I thought, but it is about escaping. And they talk about in the lyrics about escaping Pharaoh. But that Pharaoh really were the plantation owners, and Wade in the Water was a coded way of telling slaves, get into the middle of the stream, because then the dogs can't follow your scent. And, you know, and that's what the line is, Wade in the Water, God will trouble the water. So using the biblical reference of the children of Israel, escaping from Pharaoh in the Sinai and then going through the Red Sea, the water being troubled. But that way was the insinuation that God would give you a miracle. If you were able to get into the water, you could use the water to your advantage. Sort of like the old Goethe quote about, that if you're doing the right thing, divine forces will come to your aid. And I thought that was really cool. So that's what Wade in the Water was about, and I played that in the first hour. But we also connected that to Jeremy Wade and Wade in the Water and his new series, Mysteries of the Deep and River Monsters. If you missed it, go back and listen. So much fun if you've got Coast to Coast, Coast Insider. You can listen to any show you want anytime, including all those great Vault shows with Art Bell. Or you can make history yourself coming up next when we get to Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie. This is Ian Punnett. You know, we were talking about music earlier, and I would be remiss if I didn't make the connection here. So pardon me that I didn't say it earlier. I probably should have. But just as we were taking that last call from Janet in the East Village, and she was talking about Woody Guthrie, and she was talking about, this idea about music and coded messages and everything that had come up because of Wade in the Water, which I'd mentioned in the first hour. We've got a show kind of like this coming up tomorrow night. on Coast to Coast. Brad Schreiber is a music historian and a journalist, and he's written this very cool book, which I've been enjoying a lot of. I'll finish it tomorrow, but it's all about the history of musicians who use music to fight for a better world. So it's kind of like this, a lot of songs that are coded, songs that were at the time, you know, in their own times, politically conscious songs, which now we just kind of take for granted. We may not even remember the original context of the record or why it was popular or why it was controversial in its day. But, you know, country, heavy metal, psychedelia, rap, punk, it'll all come up tomorrow night. We talk about the secrets behind a lot of these politically charged songs in our modern era tomorrow night with Brad Schreiber. And in the first hour, looking forward to talking with my old friend David Mack. David Mack is the guy who's behind so many of the beautiful illustrations for Marvel Comics. He's involved in a very cool new project for Marvel Comics, which we'll talk about. But also, he got nominated for 3 Eisner Awards for his work on his graphic novel series, which he introduced here on Coast to Coast. The graphic novel series is called Cover, and it was about a cover artist, much like himself, who gets sort of tapped to become part of an underworld of assassins. I'll leave it there for now, but the first book is out. I mean, the first collection of these individual episodes of Cover has now been collected into a graphic novel, but he's got 3 Eisner Awards, and we'll talk about that with him in the first hour. Always cool. Open lines coming up next. Back to you on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Always fun doing Coast to Coast open lines. We'll pick up with Mike in Denver on Coast to Coast. Mike?
Hey, Ian. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I hope you're doing great. It's great to be on Open Lines again. There's a couple of things I wanted to talk about tonight, actually. First of all, before my main comment about radio archiving, I just had to mention, I'm sure you've heard about the Forest Fenn treasure that was recently found.
Yeah.
That's a really cool story.
It was cool.
And it's interesting because we still don't know exactly where it was found. I mean, it could be in Colorado, could have been in New Mexico.
True.
And the guy who hid it is not revealing where it was found. So I think that's kind of an interesting story.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good one to keep track of. Yeah.
Yeah. But so tonight I wanted to talk a little bit about radio archiving. So there's a lot of people out there, you know, that record radio shows and air checks, and there's no doubt people, you know, are probably recording Coast to Coast right now. I personally record a lot of shows on Sirius XM, a lot of Sinatra shows and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. And I read somewhere that Coast to Coast servers can store up to 50 years of shows. And, you know, it's interesting because Art Bell talked a lot about how people would record his shows almost obsessively. And I don't want to say obsessively in a bad way, but in a way to preserve radio history, because, you know, not every show is stored on a backup server. You know, like most of the shows on, for example, on Sirius XM, you know, they're only played once and that's it. So, you know, the question I would have is kind of, do you ever record shows on the radio or your own air checks?
Never. But I will occasionally request from the company that, and I think Dan Galanti was the last one who fulfilled this request. I wanted a copy of an interview I did with David Desmalchin. And so I asked and they sent me a file of that. I do have access, like anybody would, to Coast Insider.
Right, right.
But yeah, it actually predating, you know, you a long time ago, you may not know about this, but that we used to sell cassette copies of every show. And on the back of the After Dark newsletter, there was a list, an order form for the previous month's shows. And you could check off which ones you wanted, and then you would put write a check, or maybe they went to credit card, I don't remember. But then you would send that in, and it would arrive in the mail, and there's a series of cassettes of that show, and you could have that for posterity. There was also, and this is something which I was actually wondering about the other day. So people used to record the shows, but just in case you may not be aware of this, that they used a special type of recorder for the most part. And they used to sell this, I think they still do, through the C. Crane Company. And C. Crane made essentially a super slow recorder that would allow you to record about half of a show on one side of the cassette and then flip it over and record the second half so that you were only using one cassette per show. This was done because otherwise, if you were having to record it at real speed for a cassette, which, Danny, you'd have to tell me, is it cassette, were cassettes 7.5 IPS? Suddenly I can't remember, but it was, however that worked, it would have meant that you would have had to have had a lot of cassettes for any one show. But right. This is what I was wondering about, was how many people, when somebody passed on, right, and they have these cassettes and they were labeled Coast to Coast in their house, and they played them in a regular tape recorder. If you play them on a regular tape recorder, of course, it's ridiculous because they were recorded super slow, so it would sound really fast. And I wonder how many of those got tossed, which otherwise, to your archive question, otherwise people might have saved if they were playing them back at the same speed that they were originally recorded. So I have a feeling like there's a whole, like in the shoe boxes of history that exist in every home, in the closet, a lot of things got tossed, which would have been cool early archive material for Coast to Coast.
Probably a lot of air checks of you, because, you know, you worked at WGN radio, and a lot of people recorded air checks off WGN back in the day. So there's probably a lot of Ian Pundit's air checks sitting around in attics, and
right.
Kind of interesting when you think about it, I think. But I've always been a big fan of radio and its history and kind of preserving it. And, you know, I'm a Coast insider. Well, my mom pays for it, but
just like a millennial, my mom pays for it. Now I know you're a millennial from Colorado, Mike. Yeah. Listen, I appreciate that. And I want to get to some other people who are hanging on, but that's a really good point about archiving. And there are gaps in the Coast to Coast history early on, especially because in the earliest days, Art was the only one who was really archiving the show, I think. I take that back. I don't know. I'd have to talk to Lisa or some of the other. I'd have to call Alan or Corbett or something and find out who was doing the archiving. But I know that there are little gaps here and there in our knowledge of what happened when. Some of it was just on paper. We didn't get onto the computer thing, even though we were way early on Coast to Coast than most shows were at the time. I don't think we got them all. So anyway, thank you. Interesting question. I hope that was an interesting answer. Joe is in Wichita on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. I haven't talked to you for a long time, last year.
I was down in Emporia the other day, so I was halfway to you.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, I liked Emporia. It's a nice little town.
Good.
Did I lose you, Joe?
No, you still there?
I am. So go ahead. What were you calling about, Joe?
I wanted to ask you how your spinning dog butt book was doing, for one thing.
My dog? You're talking about...
Your book.
Yeah. Yeah, you're talking about Dizzy the Mutt with the Propeller Butt, my first children's book. Yes, there's still a few copies floating around somewhere. We did it for charity, and we raised about $10,000, I think, for dog charities out of that book. It was fun. I loved it. It's a good time.
Are you ready for the summer storms or what?
Well, see, now Dizzy's long past. So he actually succumbed to, remember that story about the somebody at a Chinese dog food factory had been poisoning dog treats that were headed to America, and he got one of those, and he died from it a couple months after he was originally diagnosed. So he passed, but his replacement is Jacula, the vampire dog. That was my second children's book, and yes, he continues to be terrified of storms, and we're having one in about an hour. So I gave him a pill about 2 hours ago, one of his anti-anxiety meds. He's doing fine. He's about 14 years old, but he's hanging in there. He's hanging in there like us, Joe, right?
Well, absolutely. But I saw the storms heading your way, so that's kind of what made me
Yeah. Call. No, I appreciate you saying that.
I wanted to say this, though. You said you're 60?
Yeah.
So I know the world is, I don't understand prejudice, because every ethnic group has brought a tremendous amount of beautifulness and power
yep.
to the universe.
Yep.
And to be prejudiced about somebody that just is different than you, it's just wrong.
I never got it. I didn't get that gene either. And so I'm mystified why anybody goes down that road. And there's lots of prejudices, and I'm not saying I'm 100% prejudice free, but I know I always check myself if I ever find myself thinking in terms of they versus us, because there is no they versus us, and we're all in this mess together. And I hope working together, we can all get out of it. Always good to hear your voice, Joe. Wildcard line, Mary is in New Jersey on Coast to Coast. Mary?
Hello, how are you tonight? Your guest had me thinking about rivers and water. And
yeah.
I live close to the Delaware.
Oh, yeah, I love Delaware.
And I was told, this is back in the 1970s, there was a man who used to walk his pet alligators at nighttime. I'm so glad I never ran into him. And
funny.
There's a story I heard. It must have been on Coast to Coast, right? It just sticks in my head. They were talking about octopus. So was your guest, like grab the ship and whatever.
Yeah, that was the squid, but yeah. Same family.
And I'm thinking, when was this? It had to be Coast to Coast, right? But they're talking about octopus, how intelligent they are. And
yes.
Could they be living on other planets? And they're so intelligent. And then, I don't know who told the story, but like a baby all wrapped up real tight, like floating on down, and the octopus grabbed hold, and it's a female octopus. Oh, and she loves this baby, right? Now, we know humans can't breathe underwater, right? And then this black and white whale comes up. Oh, baby. They love the baby. So it turns out to be, Greek mythology? What's his name? Neptune.
Yes, Neptune.
So I'm thinking that's Greek mythology, right?
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, I have that picture in my head. They were telling stories, and I'm thinking, I don't know where it came from. It has to be because
But you know that the whole thing about octopus and how intelligent they are is really fascinating, because what they figured out is that how hard it is to contain an octopus. And so that was one of the things they discovered, how easy it is that they can get through the smallest possible crevices, and they test things. So as soon as you try to contain an octopus, they go through a process of looking for the weakest link. And this kind of test of intelligence has been done a couple of times, and yeah, it is pretty amazing. Well, thank you, Mary. I love that story about the crocodile guy. I'm going to look that up later on tonight. Somebody who used to walk a crocodile down the Delaware Water Gap is amazing stretch and beautiful, and also in its own way, in many cases, very mysterious. First time caller line, Bob is actually in a town where I used to live, which is Long Branch, New Jersey. Bob.
Yes, Ian, how you doing? I must have read Wikipedia or something, and I saw that you worked in Long Branch.
I did.
Did you ever eat at Max's Hot Dogs on the boardwalk?
I mean, I can't remember the name of the place, so you catch me there, but I remember we used to go down to the boardwalk all the time. I was there the year it burned. It caught fire.
That's where Max's Hot Dogs was.
Right.
The Haunted Mansion, that's correct.
Yeah.
It burned. But I wanted to ask you, you did a bunch of shows on D.B. Cooper, and I was fascinated by it. I was a must-listen.
I loved them, too.
Did you follow-up show? Did it ever... I forgot the gentleman you had on.
Yeah, we did follow up a couple of times, and they were in the end. He was even on to a different suspect, but for a long time, that looked like a real possibility, and I was disappointed that it didn't turn out to be him.
I happen to catch a couple television shows where reporters thought this, and it's that D.B. Cooper shows you how we're fascinating.
Good. I appreciate
loved
that.
Every second of the show, but
thank you, man.
I enjoy you. You're the best.
Appreciate that.
Hooked on Coast to Coast.
Glad to have you. Always good to hear from old haunts like that. Thank you, Bob. I will tell you, I was just thinking about Long Branch, which is, at one time, had been, I think they called it the City of Presidents, because it was not just a place where several presidents were from, but also one or two vice presidents, and where they used to summer. And so it was one of the reasons, it was sort of like it was the one of the places where these beautiful mansions, a couple of different presidents were associated with that town, and it sort of had this grin of mystique at one point. But when I was there, and I'll just make this real quick, there was a woman who ran a diner downstairs below the radio station. I worked for a company called it was Y107 was the name of our station, and I was the morning guy. And during it was a music show, so I would play sometimes two songs in a row in the morning, and I would duck down, and Doris ran this little diner on Broadway in Long Branch, and she wouldn't get up from her chair because she was kind of old, and she liked to just sit there, smoke, and drink coffee. And so all of her customers used to run the kitchen for her. So we would walk in. It wasn't just me. It was other people, like the mailman and other people come by. And Doris would just sit there drinking her coffee like this. And she's like, hi, how are you? Yeah, go ahead. Make yourself some toast. And so, you know, would you need me? I can make an egg. I got it, Doris. Okay, fine, darling. Thank you so much. That's what morning was like every morning. I was making myself at home behind Doris's counter using her grill while she sat there and watched me make my breakfast. And then I'd leave her $5 like she did something. East of the Rockies, Barry is in Rock Hill, South Carolina on Coast to Coast. Barry?
Hello, Ian Sonnet and Boyle Boy. Keep up the good bumper music. But I've just got to say, you've got a fascinating show tonight, Ian. Keep it up. And going back to your previous guest, he filmed a show at the mouth of the Cape Fear River, which, Ian, is right between Wilmington, North Carolina, and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I just rewatched the Robert De Niro Cape Fear four nights ago. I just rewatched it. I love that movie.
Yes, the original was Robert Mitchum. I was just
right.
I was telling Gina, it was filmed partly in Wilmington and partly right now on the Cape Fear River.
Well, but Mitchum makes a cameo in the second one too. In the remake, Mitchum does. So excellent, Cape Fear. Yeah, what a great movie, and what a beautiful part of the country too. I have some property in Beaufort. One of these days, I'll get a chance to enjoy it. I hope. Wherever you are, I hope you're enjoying it. If you've got a storm, hang in there. It'll be the perfect soundtrack for one more hour of open lines. We'll give you the numbers coming up in just a minute, and you could join the conversation. If you're holding on, please do. And we'll get to you right out of the box. And it's fun to go in places where we haven't gone before. Having a good Friday night with it on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett.